This is Help Wanted, the show that makes your work work for you. I'm Jason Pfeiffer, editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur Magazine.
And I'm money expert Nicole Lappin. On Tuesdays, Jason and I answer the helpline and help callers solve their work problems.
And on Thursdays, I give you one way to improve your work and build a career or company you love.
And it starts now. Jason, let's help some business peeps today.
It only seems right, right?
So as we try to grow and build and advance our careers, we're going to run into a problem. You know what that problem is, Jason?
What is it?
You can scale a business, but you cannot scale yourself.
Truer words never spoken.
So you'll need an awesome team around you to help you reach those growth goals. But if you're a small business owner, or if you're a solopreneur, or if you're a side hustler, you might not have big Fortune 500 money to just throw around at your dream team, right? So what do you do?
Well, I'll tell you what we did. We asked Adam Broda. I've been following Adam on LinkedIn for a long time because he is super smart about careers. He's actually a coach that helps mid to late career professionals find their dream job, which we'll talk about a little bit. But most importantly, he helps us understand how small businesses can compete with big companies when it comes to acquiring the best talent.
Yeah, Jason, and we're solving for this question because we have solved for the question of how to find the best talent.
Yes, it's me. I don't know if you know that. I'm actually just the answer. No, the solution is LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place.
Yes. So you can find the right person on LinkedIn at linkedin.com/helpwanted. But once you choose them, let's figure out how to get them to choose you.
And let's ask Adam exactly that.
Adam Broda, welcome to Help Wanted.
Yeah, I'm excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
Adam, when I first saw your profile on LinkedIn, I thought two things. Number one, that guy's got a lot of followers, so congratulations. We're talking in the 370,000s of followers. Number two is this statement of yours in your bio, which is, I help mid-career professionals break into tech industry dream jobs. Now, what I love about that is its incredible specificity. There are a lot of people who help people in their careers, and there's always questions that people have when they enter crowded fields of how to stand out. And I've been so curious about how you developed that incredibly specific focus area and how it didn't turn out to be so specific that you didn't have enough clients. I think that's what people always worry about, is like, if I'm too narrow, then I'm not accessible to everybody. Tell me about that.
Yeah, that's a great question. And I'm going to give you probably an answer you didn't expect. It's been a very iterative process for me. So I started Broda Coaching, which is the name of my coaching company, back in 2019. I was working at Boeing at the time, had just had my first child, and the world just decided to light its hair on fire. COVID happened and some planes crashed and no one was traveling, and the writing was on the wall that probably not a bad time to think about a different job/industry. So That's what I did. Started reaching out to network connections and ended up moving into the tech industry. And yeah, I think around that same time, I was like, man, what would it look like if I started a side business? There's a lot of people doing it. Feels like it's a good thing as the economy kind of gets into this weird state. Who the heck knew what we were getting into with COVID, right? So yes, I landed a new job. That's great. Congrats. But also the world is shutting down. That's never happened in my lifetime. So maybe I need a plan B. And the first year, I just started posting some things on LinkedIn. I started a website and began taking coaching clients in three different veins. I did life coaching, I did organizational and self-development coaching, and then I did career coaching. And very, very quickly, I learned that I'm not cut out for life coaching. Just one too many calls where I had to end by saying, hey, I'm not a doctor and you definitely should talk to a medical professional. And then the organizational coaching was fun, but it was hard to standardize what I was sharing with people because everyone kind of walked in with a different thing. And then career coaching, I had been a hiring manager at Boeing for about 6 years. It just felt right. So that's kind of how it started. That first full 2020 year was me just iterating, figuring out what to charge, what to talk about. Again, it's a side business, so it's not a situation where I need to run super fast and maximize profits. It was cool because I had a long time to kind of figure out what I wanted to do. Fast forward to 2024, at least I think that's what year it is. I'm still doing it as a side business. It looks very different than the way I was doing it years ago, right? I was exclusively one-on-one coaching. I was very limited and selected with who I was working with. I run a different style program now where it's more cohort-oriented, community-oriented. We do group coaching calls. We do office hours. We do a bunch of different things like that. But the LinkedIn thing has probably been the most consistent component of my brand, if you want to say that, for a long time. You know, I post 4 to 6 times a week, post content about career transitions. And I started off with just career transitions. And then it became career transitions into tech and engineering. And then it became career transitions for mid to late career professionals. And the short version is that's just a continuation of the iteration and prototyping process for me. That's how I think. I'm an engineer by trade. And, you know, if I can deliver more value for one group of people and have a better experience and reduce the amount of time it takes for me to go from students to executives, it's a win across the board. So I found myself being a better fit for people in that mid to late stage side of things. And the transition from student to first job is a big one, but just based off of where my strengths are as a coach, and then also the experiences that I have as a hiring manager, it was a better fit for those people. But that's how it is.
I love that. And it just reminds me of this truism in just about every field, which is if you try to be for everybody, you end up not really being for anybody. And the most valuable thing that you can do is create something or speak about something or frame yourself in a way that other people immediately see, oh, this person is for me. You're being hyper-specific enough that someone says, ah, finally, me, you're for me. And if you say, I help mid-career professionals try to get into tech, for people for whom that describes, they immediately see it. Aha, this guy, for me, finally. Whereas if you were just said, I help people find good jobs. Well, that's cool. There are a lot of people looking for good jobs, but now you're just competing against literally everybody else who says something like that.
Which there are a lot of.
Yeah, you can't be all things to all people or you're nothing to anyone in business. Oh. And it sounds like you went through an unexpected year of Goldilocksing. And I'd love to help some professionals with everything you iterated upon during that time, specifically business owners. We've been doing a few episodes, Adam, for business owners specifically who are trying to hire their dream team. And we're answering some of their frequently asked questions. I'd love to throw one your way. If you find an awesome candidate who seems perfect for the job, but is already employed, is it even worth reaching out?
I love this question. I can kind of answer from two perspectives, right? Like I still have a full-time job in the tech industry and I lead a tech organization and I hire people. And I can speak from that perspective. I can also speak as a small business owner where I hire employees for my side business and we scale and we do all the fun stuff. So the short answer is yes, absolutely. I can tell you that from both perspectives, working from one of the largest companies in the world to working for just me, the right employee can make all the difference, right? Sometimes that's easier said than done to go out and get that person. But if you've got somebody with quality references and the right skill set and you know what you need to solve your problems, the fact that they're currently employed should not be a barrier. The other thing that I would say is in the tech world, we recruit all the time people that have current jobs. And there's kind of a systematic approach we take to it, right? We don't want to waste our own time, but target companies that are laying off. Target product organizations or business organizations inside of those companies that have laid off. If you hear an announcement about a tech firm that's shedding a product, go find those people that are left over. Target companies with RTO and work from home mandates.
That's a great point. So in other words, if somebody's got a return to office mandate, there are going to be a lot of grumpy people who are looking to jump ship.
Exactly. We've all kind of been through that state, it feels like, in the last 2 years. And I'm not a recruiter. I'm a hiring manager. So the amount of sourcing work that I do is somewhat limited, but yeah, if I find somebody I need in one of those sweet spots, I have no hesitancy in reaching out. The last one I was going to say is I've also had experience or had success finding people that have 4+ years experience with no promotion, right? I can see all that history in LinkedIn. So if you've been at a company for that amount of time and there's no promotion associated, that might also be another tip off that you might be willing to move to a new opportunity.
And I was just interviewing Barbara Corcoran of Shark Tank. Her last 3 home purchases personally were of homes that weren't on the market. And so she actually wrote letters to these homeowners who maybe never thought about selling their house. And she wrote really thoughtful letters. And she almost gave me a template of what to write. If you're looking at a house, or if you spotted a house and you just love it so much, what to write on a letter, slip it under the door, put it in the mailbox. Is there something like that? Are there key points that you should include in a cold outreach to somebody who's already employed?
I would say that there's probably a ton of similarities. I come at it from a couple different approaches. The answer to your question again is yes. I'm going to try to define the value proposition about as early as I possibly can. I find that especially with tech workers at higher levels, which is a lot of the people that I'm interacting with, it pays to just be very direct and concise. Hey, here's the opportunity. Here's the pay and what you can expect. Here's responsibilities and the number of people, number of clients, all that good stuff. I try to get relatively upfront in my message. But the other big one is trying to sell somebody that potentially would be grumpy. They're being forced to return to the office. They haven't been promoted in a while. They're in a team that's been stuck with layoffs. But I try to paint the picture like a grass is greener scenario. There's growth here. There's opportunities here. We're promoting. We're doing these things that I believe they might have a problem with in their internal company. So I try to leave the door open as much as I can with what is available to them, in addition to just specifics on the role.
I'd love to double click on that for a second, because it's interesting. What if the person is not grumpy? If you're approaching a homeowner who isn't thinking about selling a house, you want to do both flatter the house and the area and whatever, but also talk about yourself. So how much of that balance exists where you say, hey, I notice all your amazing accolades and you're so great and educated and qualified and you're amazing and I'm amazing and my company's amazing.
I'm going to say another answer that maybe you didn't expect, but I actually have more success with getting them to sell to me. It's the sell me the pen trick. Instead of coming in and saying, hey, I'm amazing, you're amazing, let's be amazing together. Really what I try to do is paint a picture of a world where there's a limited number of opportunities in a really exciting space to be. And then I try to get them, if they're interested, to describe why they think they would be a good fit, right? Or what they could bring to the table. Of course, yes, I'm acknowledging, hey, you work at this company. Hey, you have these experiences. These are good things. But I'm recruiting a small, highly capable team of leaders, and we're going to do some really dynamic stuff. We're going to create new businesses, whatever it is. Tell me why you think you might be a good fit. Actually is way more likely to get a response than me trying to do more selling and kind of pontificating.
But that's not on the first outreach. You're not slipping into LinkedIn DMs saying, hey, tell me why you'd be amazing for my company.
You'd be surprised. It happens in different states. I'm not always reaching out to total strangers. A lot of times I'm reaching out to people that I would call first or second degree connections. So they might have an idea of who I am. I might have an idea of who they are. They're not complete and total zero to ones. To your point, Nicole, sometimes it's hard to just jump right in and have someone sell to me. That's a good chance I might get ignored. But yeah, if I have like an established foundation, that actually might be the initial take, right? Is kind of describe the opportunity, describe why it's good, describe why there's a limited number of seats or opportunities to get in, and then move that direction. If it is a situation where I'm doing general searches on LinkedIn or Ladders or some other site where talent might be, and I have no pre-established relationship, then it functions a little bit more like the way you described, right? I'm going to spend a lot more time up front describing why we're interesting, why they should pay attention, what cool things we have going on. And then really my objective in that place or that space is to just get any response, right? That initial pass is more about just getting a response of any kind. Like you would in a cold email outreach, right? I'm just looking to generate a conversation. And once I've got people talking, then I can decide based off of how they react, where to go next.
Yeah, like a dating app. You're not sending the first message. Tell me why you would be an amazing partner to me.
Sure. But like I said, if I'm spending as a hiring manager, my limited amount of time doing my own recruiting, which doesn't happen all that much, right? In my corporate world, I have a lot of people that help me with that. And they're way better at it than I am. But if it's my limited time being spent, it's likely I'm not going to start with total strangers. It's likely I'm going to run through people that are closer or warmer to me just so that I can skip some of that process. And hopefully my time will be a little bit better. Likelihood of success.
I love the psychology behind what I'm hearing here for what it's worth, which is that once you get people to engage with the idea of what it would be like to be somewhere else to fulfill someone's desire to have you on their team, right? You know, it's like, oh, what do you think it would be like over here? And then that makes the person think, what would it be like over there? What would I be valued? And how would I be valued? And then all of a sudden, they start feeling grass is greener and they start wanting to move. I mean, this has happened to me in one way or another, where I woke up one morning happy at the job that I was at. And then by the evening, I had some interaction with someone and I come home and I tell my wife, I think I'm going to make a change in my career. That's happened a couple times. But I want to ask you another question, which is about something I have experienced myself. Say you have an interview with a perfect candidate, absolute spot on fit for what you're looking for, but their target salary is way more than you've budgeted for that role. I have dealt with this and I've been unsure of what to do. Do I engage this person? Am I going to waste their time? Am I going to get into a situation where I'm stretching the budget? Now I'm going to make a sacrifice somewhere else. How should a small business owner think through whether it's worth stretching their budget for that dream employee, and how to even think about engaging that person who, at least until you start changing your budget, is more expensive than you are actually prepared to spend?
Yeah, good question on the budget end. As a small business owner, not to oversimplify this, but it all starts with math, in my opinion. I need to kind of know the range that I have to live inside of. You know, I know my ideal budget. I know what I think I can spend on employees in a given year. And what I might do is just step back and say, okay, to what degree is this person proven? That is really where the additional value conversation starts. Is this a selfish bias? Is this a bias because of somebody giving me a good recommendation? Is there something I like about this individual? Is there something entering into the equation that isn't really based in facts in reality? That's kind of how I will start stripping the conversation down. Like I said, from there, once I have done the math and I know what my budget actually looks like and what kind of wiggle room I have, and again, depending on the size of the company, that could be virtually nothing or it could be multiple times the salary. But once I've done that exercise, it just comes back to the value proposition, right? What is the return on investment that I would expect for this individual? If I'm going to put 50K in, will I get 50K back? And how can I validate that hypothesis based off of what they've done in the past? Is there evidence that they've created 50K of value, right? And if I'm not sure, can I ask them? It's as simple as that. I mean, really, when it comes down to it, if we have a good fit, skill-wise, experience-wise, the ROI is there, and I've gone through the process and they're asking for more than I can shell out, right? Or we haven't gone through the process yet and they've already identified that there's a mismatch. I don't ever want to waste anybody's time, but that's loosely the process that I would go through, is make sure I'm crystal clear on the wiggle room I have in my budget. What is the maximum I can pay out? Just so I know exactly what kind of negotiation space I have. And then secondly, is I'm looking for as much evidence as possible ahead of time or in the interview process to confirm what kind of ROI they can create. And as a small business owner, when I say ROI, I mean the realistic sense of that word. There's got to be some sort of return financially. If my company is three people, right? And I got to be able to kind of prove that with metrics and data and KPIs. And not everybody that I talk with, depending on the skills, that's going to be an easy exercise. Some people are not going to have all that information readily available. It's not going to be on their LinkedIn profile. So it does require a bit of digging from time to time, and that's okay. But it's loosely the process, right? It's just let the data kind of lead the conversation and try to remove emotion from it and some of those weird biases that pop up into our heads. And that's usually how I approach the conversation.
You know, it's funny in hearing that answer is I just started drifting back towards Nicole's home buying metaphor, because when my wife and I were looking to buy a new home, which was about a year and a half ago, we made the mistake of going to a couple places that were way beyond our budget, just because we were curious what they looked like. And of course,
everyone does that, Jason.
Yeah, of course, everyone does that. This is how you end up spending way more than you thought that you would. But it was in some way a giant mistake, because it made the things that were actually within your budget seem much smaller and lesser than. And it ultimately drove us to significantly increase our budget, which forced us then to ultimately buy a place that was much more expensive than we were planning to pay, and then made us rethink our entire family finances. And I would say, in the end, buying the more expensive thing turned out to be the right decision. It required some pain. in that then we had to do a lot more like financial planning than we'd ever planned for. But, you know, ultimately, that's a good thing. We were supposed to do it. And I said 30 seconds ago when I was telling the story that I thought it was a mistake, but now I'm realizing that actually it was totally the right decision for our lifestyles. So maybe the answer is it is worth engaging with those people who are a little more expensive than you planned, because if you can see how they're a fit in your business and they bring more value, what it just means is, like you said, Adam, you got to do the math and you got to start thinking, well, where are you spending less? Or how can you shift your priorities and resources? And as long as that person who costs more money is going to be of more value, then you have done the math right.
I'll see your example and I'll raise you an example.
Oh boy.
So I would say plus one to that.
Stick around. Help Wanted. We'll be right back. Nicole, have you ever thought about the one that got away?
Jason, I am happily in a relationship. You know that.
No, the hire that got away. Someone that you thought was perfect for your team, but they were already with another employer.
Oh, well, in that case, yeah, I think about her all the time.
Well, it's not too late. You can reach out to that person on LinkedIn. LinkedIn Jobs helps you hire professionals that you can't find anywhere else, even people who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place.
Okay, looks like it's time for me to shoot my shot.
Do it. And I know you may have your heart set on one person, but if you do want to open it up and post a role to a bigger applicant pool, you can do it for free at linkedin.com/helpwanted. And because there are so many professionals on LinkedIn, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within just 24 hours. So you'll never have a one that got away again.
Incredible. That's linkedin.com/helpwanted.
Yep. LinkedIn.com/helpwanted. Terms and conditions apply. Happy hiring ever after. Nicole, have you ever thought about the one that got away?
Jason, I am happily in a relationship. You know that.
No, the hire that got away. Someone that you thought was perfect for your team, but they were already with another employer.
Oh, well, in that case, yeah, I think about her all the time.
Well, it's not too late. You can reach out to that person on LinkedIn. LinkedIn Jobs helps you hire professionals that you can't find anywhere else, even people who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place.
Okay, looks like it's time for me to shoot my shot.
Do it. And I know you may have your heart set on one person, but if you do want to open it up and post a role to a bigger applicant pool, you can do it for free at linkedin.com/helpwanted. And because there are so many professionals on LinkedIn, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within just 24 hours. So you'll never have a one that got away again.
Incredible. That's linkedin.com/helpwanted.
Yep. LinkedIn.com/helpwanted. Terms and conditions apply. Happy hiring ever after. Welcome back to Help Wanted. Let's get to it.
This has happened to me multiple times in even seeking out coaches to work with, where I will think, you know, hey, I need to work with a sales coach. Hey, I need to work with a business coach. I got this problem and I don't have the time to figure it out. So maybe I can get some help. And you kind of go through the research process and you have, well, I've got coach A that costs this amount of money. I got coach B that's this amount. And then there's this fantasy coach out there that I probably can't afford at all, but maybe I'll just do like a 15-minute chat with them, right? And in that 15-minute chat, the amount of value that you understand this person has, oh my gosh, I can't not work with that. I'm now realizing why they charge what they charge. And if I can even get a fraction of that built into my business, it's going to change everything. So absolutely that happens all the time. I would say that there's definitely a little bit of a risk reward scenario there. I like the idea of maybe not limiting yourself, you know, back to your real estate example, right? Maybe it's okay to go look at those Instagram pictures of those Netflix homes. It's okay to go check out the profile of those amazing people. You might learn something in the process. You might learn something by talking to them. And I'd say that sometimes that's kind of how the business world operates, is you don't know what you don't know, the unknown unknowns, right? Someone kind of has to open your eyes at some point. And depending on what's behind the curtain, you might be willing to stretch for it. You didn't know what was there in the first place. So that's okay. That happens too.
Well, I guess it depends on the scale plan that you have, because you probably want to hire one size too big. I don't have kids yet, but you buy pants that are a little bit bigger than the kid so that the kid can grow into the pants and you don't have to get rid of the pants so quickly.
In theory.
Well, you're crushing it with the analogies today. That's a great one.
It is true. I mean, although, let us just be clear, no matter what, you are still buying a lot of pairs of pants.
Yes. I have two children and we go through more pants than I ever would have imagined. It's ridiculous.
So if you're a small business owner and you can't compete on salary with some of the big companies that potentially these great folks with a lot of talent are talking with, what are some of the other perks that you've seen companies give to attract the best talent?
Well, you know, I'm a product manager in my day job, right? When I'm not Batman and I go to the office, I think and live in that product space. A lot of what I do is try to get inside of the mind of the customer, right? What's going to make that person have a fantastic experience? What's going to make them buy? What's going to make them believe? Do a lot of that same process as a small business owner, where I'm asking myself the same question in recruiting talent and then with the people that are going to go through my service. I would say that pain points is the name of the game in the talent world, right? Like if I can learn about what is annoying at that person's job or what's demotivating or what's not ideal, I can typically leverage that to some degree. Getting that information is hard. That's really where these coffee chats pay dividends. It's hard for me to get you to express pain points when we're in a LinkedIn DM. It's not that difficult for me to do that in a quick online Zoom call. So there is some of that motivation behind it. In terms of what's working right now in the pain points landscape, it's the work from home days, right? Like maybe I can't offer you another $25,000, but if I can give you two extra days where you can flexibly work from wherever the heck you want, that is a massive, massive game changer. Even in the corporate world, if you're working in a 5-day in the office environment and I can give you a hybrid environment where you can decide 2 of the 5 days, you can work wherever you want to work and set your own schedule and not commute, there's humongous value for people in that conversation. So
I once talked to the head of people at Buffer, which is a tech company that had gone to a 4-day work week. And she told me that one of her colleagues had said it would take an extra $100,000 of salary for them to go to a job that was a 5-day work week. That's how much they valued that extra time. Now, not everyone's going to go to a 4-day work week, but yes, there is a lot of flexibility in where you work and how often you have to be in the office, and people value that.
I wouldn't say that's far off from the data that I get back. I even put this on a poll. What kind of salary hit would you be willing to take for one additional work from home day? And the average answer I got was something like $50,000 to $60,000 a year.
Wow.
It's significant. That's a huge needle mover right now in terms of non-financially associated benefits that I can offer. You know, even as a small business owner, those things are on the table.
Talking money is always uncomfortable for people. Even in these times where you're talking about a relationship entirely based upon money, there's a stereotype that it's a bad look if a candidate asks about a salary for a role too early. But I also don't know why that's a bad look, because how far down a rabbit hole do you want to go before you discover that this thing doesn't pay what you need it to, or that it would be a step down from what you currently get paid? When do you think that this conversation should take place? And you can answer this maybe even from both perspectives, like when should a business owner share this, but also how and when should a candidate ask, what are you paying?
I've worked at a number of companies in my short lifetime. I've worked in the nuclear world, I worked in the aerospace world, I work in tech now, and I own my own business. I think a lot of it is generational. And I'm not going to get into the generation name game blaming situation, sure. Right? I just think a lot of things have changed in 30, 40 years where, you know, having these conversations with my dad is different than having them with other hiring manager peers. And, you know, older generations, loyalty was a different conversation. There were not as many jobs and the job environment was very different. So to show up in a hiring environment 40 years ago where you had way less options and way less ability to quickly move between options, the internet didn't exist. You couldn't just magically put your resume out there, right? There was a lot of other barriers for you to kind of show up and not recognize the loyalty syndrome that existed and recognize that, you know, you had this fantastic opportunity, you need to be really grateful and just go right to money. That could have come off as disrespectful. I think the world has changed so much, even in the past 5 years. COVID did some just crazy things to the way hiring works, I think in a good way. The stigma behind that question has really, really changed a lot. I get training now in the corporate world for how to think about those questions and address those questions. And I recognize that this is not a universal thing, but I don't think those questions are off limits. I don't think they're weird. I think obviously different cultures, different countries are going to view those questions differently. And you definitely need to be able to read the room. But the short answer, Jason, is as soon as possible, as soon as it makes sense. For me personally, when I'm interviewing, I typically do research ahead of time on payscale.com and levels.fyi. There's a bunch of websites out there that are good resources for searching up tech salaries. But if I know that I'm close, I'll go through the interview process. I'm a person that doesn't view going through an interview as a waste of my time, even if I don't get it. I think every opportunity I have to practice interviewing is a good thing. I'm going to take it almost in a heartbeat, but I will collect as much information I can through the interview process. I'm going to point blank ask the hiring audiences about how pay works, right? Think about how pay at a FANG company with the RSUs and the four-year signing packages. That's not the same thing as how it might work in an old school engineering company where 90% of your pay is base.
So you want to define FANG, by the way?
Just FANG, yeah.
I don't even know what the acronym is, but let's just say like Fortune 10 companies, Facebook, Google, Amazon, Netflix, NVIDIA, you know, the heavy hitting Magnificent Seven tech firms of the world. The way that they do compensation packages is not all that straightforward. You might have a base salary that is livable, quote, and then 60%+ of your salary might be paid out in stock units. So yeah. For me to like try and dive into that on a call with a recruiter versus me to kind of go through the interview process and collect as much information on that as I possibly can, and then kind of come up with how I feel about salary, I typically prefer to go through the interview first. But yeah, like if you don't want to waste your own time, it's okay. It's an acceptable thing to do these days to get into salary early. And most of the hiring best practices in tech and engineering right now, you're going to get that question, what are your salary expectations, from the recruiting team on that initial screening call. So most cases, they're going to bring it up. So you should have an answer prepared. If they don't, you can kind of decide if it's worth talking about it right then. If not, you can get into it in the interview or even after the interview. You know, I don't have the stigma. I think it's really, really changed the past 3-4 years with many, many states being forced to put salary ranges into job descriptions. Granted, some of them are ludicrous.
The ranges are ludicrous.
The ranges are ludicrous.
It pays $50,000 to $200,000.
Yeah. There was a while there that Netflix, because they were fighting it pretty hard, was doing 90K to 900K on every rec they put up, which is just not helpful. But yeah, it's not a universal thing. Read the room, right? Do your research, understand how the company views salary. Try to have a good idea of the pay structure before you head into a conversation like that. But I'd say that if it's a question you need to check the box before you want to move forward and do more interviews or spend more of your time, just ask. Be respectful, of course, but just ask.
I also recommend that folks searching for jobs spend just as much time looking for a great salary as they do a great manager, which it can be invaluable. If you're hiring, what are some of the ways that you can show a candidate that you'd be a great employer?
Ooh, loaded question. And I like this one. I'm going to kind of leverage both sides of my experience globe for a second and kind of speak from a career coaching perspective and also as a hiring manager in tech. I think there's generally 4 pillars of what I would call career success. And I'll kind of walk through those briefly. The first one is we want to put you in a job. When I say we, like the company hiring, I want to put you in a job where you have some kind of connection to a passion or a motivation, right? I want you to do work that you're excited about, that gets you going, you're not bored by, there's challenge there. I want passion. The next thing that I want to see or want to help you connect is on your strengths. I want you to have work to do that you're good at doing, right? It's easier to do work when you're good at it. It's easier to promote. It's easier to help other people when you know what the heck is going on. I want you to have the ability to use your strengths. The third component would be environment. I want you to enjoy the environment that you're working in, whether that's remote and hybrid, or maybe it's big company, small company. Maybe it's lots of female leaders. Maybe it's lots of opportunity to move around. It could be a lot of things, but I want the environment expectations to line up as much as possible. And then the fourth one, no surprise, is compensation. It is not the most important component of career satisfaction, but it is a component. You could hit the first three and you can miss on compensation, and it's going to be a short period of time before that person gets pretty miserable, right? So that in a nutshell is really kind of what I try to offer as an employer to people considering my company or considering my team. Is I want to understand what those parameters are for the talent sitting in the room with me. And then I want to sell to those expectations, right? Like if I can learn over the series of an interview or several interviews, how you feel about passions and strengths, environment and comp, and I can hit all that, that's what I want to make really, really clear. We're a good fit because we can kind of get all this stuff synchronized and there's a lot of motivation there for you to have a satisfying career with us.
Adam, one final question, a very important one.
Sure.
If you could only hire one person for your company,
Jason Pfeiffer.
Would it be? I appreciate that. The question was going to be, is it a ranch house, a Victorian, or a brownstone? Doesn't mean anything. I was just trying to tie the hiring to the real estate. Oh my
God. I'm going brownstone, by the way.
You were really thinking through that one. You were like, what does it mean?
There's a part of me that was thinking people groups were representative in the architecture types that you chose. And I wasn't sure. No, I'm
when
I'm
analogies go too far.
Good question for the ages. Help Wanted is a production of Money News Network. Help Wanted is hosted by me, Jason Pfeiffer.
And me, Nicole Lappin. Our executive producer is Morgan Lavoie. If you want some help, email our helpline at helpwanted@moneynewsnetwork.com for the chance to have some of your questions answered on the show. And follow us on Instagram at Money News and TikTok at Money News Network for exclusive content and to see our beautiful faces. Maybe a little dance.
Oh, I didn't sign up for that.
All right. Well, talk to you soon.